You're listening to Managing Leadership Anxiety, Yours and Theirs, a podcast offered in partnership with Missio Alliance. Each episode, we discuss internal and relational pressures, how they block effective leadership, and how we can move through them to a greater health. And now your host, Steve Cutts.
Oh, man. Hey, I have been so excited for this episode because I've been doing several solo episodes. And by solo, of course, I mean Mrs. Cuss has been joining me. We've been kicking around Ted Lasso and attachment theory and all kinds of good stuff. But we're back to some guests, and not just some guests, but a couple of my favorite people, Glenn and Holly Packiam. I've gotten the privilege of knowing Glenn and Holly and hanging out with them over the last few years. And man, there's so much I appreciate about them. One of the things I really love is just... I guess starting with Glenn, he's a theologian. He has a doctorate of theology from Durham. Not bad, but he's a practical theologian. I don't know if Glenn would describe himself that way, but I'm always on the hunt for theologians who are looking for practical ways to implement it. And so Glenn's written these amazing books, Worship and the World to Come, which was like the accessible book based on his doctorate. One of my favorites of Glenn's actually is Blessed, Broken, and Given, this kind of Eucharistic way of living. Resilient Pastor, which got many of us through COVID and still has profound impact and is also the name of Glenn's amazing podcast. And Holly's no slouch. Holly's not just a pastor. And by just a pastor, I don't mean diminutively. Holly has a master's in counseling and has done so much work up front and behind the scenes of integrating psychology and theology. So Glenn and Holly, welcome to Managing Leadership Anxiety.
Hey, Steve.
Good to see you.
Good to see you, man.
Holly, I believe this is your first time on the show. Congratulations.
It is. Thank you.
Yeah.
I've been a fan and listener for many years.
Oh, good. And we're going to get to the book that you guys have co-written,
The Intentional Year.
Thank you so much. The Intentional Year. And then, of course, the journal for that is coming out in July. Mm-hmm. But before we get to that, I do feel this is a global podcast. We have listeners all around the world, but everyone should right now be interested in what's going on in Denver with the Nuggets. Glenn, talk to us about this.
Listen, Steve, this is the first time in our, 47-year history of the franchise, the Denver Nuggets won their first NBA championship. And it is global news because the superstar, Nikola Jokic, is from Serbia. His sidekick is from Canada, Jamal Murray. So this is global news, man. It's big time. And I've enjoyed texting you throughout the playoffs, Steve. It's super fun being a fan with you.
It's been so fun, and we've been focusing on thoughts from Ted Lasso the last few episodes, and there's been such a parallel journey with the Denver Nuggets. Let's just hear from either one of you guys. Just what's your take on the team culture of the Nuggets? Because to me, this is a huge piece of why we won.
Well, I'll speak just because Holly's, let's just say she's only watched a few minutes of Nuggets basketball.
I only know what I know through Glenn.
That's right. Yeah, yeah. But I'll tell you what I observe about Nuggets team culture. It's a coach who believes in his players, and it's the power of what you can do when you know that someone believes in you. I mean, the story of Jamal Murray tearing his ACL or MCL, whatever it was, and crying and saying, "Coach, are you guys going to cut me?" And the coach saying, "You're ours, Jamal. You're not going anywhere, you know." And I think it shows, so it shows that. I think another lesson that it shows is sometimes what takes a good team to a great team is the presence of a few experienced veterans. And experienced veterans is not the same thing as superstar players, you know, like in the NBA, it's like sign in the, so I think about that as a pastor building a team sometimes, you know, like the presence of mature leaders on the team can take a good team to a great team. And that doesn't mean the most mature or right person is the flashiest, but it's the right kind of culture chemistry fit. So anyway, I'm a big fan, and I think there's loads of leadership lessons to be gleaned from it.
I totally agree. I've really enjoyed watching the motivated change agents, watching each player point to someone else on the team.
Yes.
Our two superstars, really, Jamal Murray and, of course, Nikola Jokic. Most people would say Nikola Jokic is currently the best basketball player in the world.
Yeah.
And just his selflessness, his servant leadership is really stunning.
Yes.
Okay, let's get into some topics. I would like to tackle Intentional Year, but before we get to that, you guys recently made a significant geographical move after 2 decades plus in Colorado Springs, long, faithful leadership through really some incredibly difficult times and some really amazing times at New Life Church. Mm-hmm. You guys moved to California to Rock Harbor Church. I'm curious what you think about geographical moves and faith and new beginnings. What's that been like for you guys?
Oh, wow, Steve. Yeah, it's been quite a journey. I think I was pretty settled and stable in our community and just, you know, an incredible church, incredible people. As you mentioned, you know, there were definitely some mountaintops and valleys that we walked through over the years, just with some things we navigated in church. And there were definitely moments where we wanted to leave, but we really felt like the Lord was calling us to stay through the midst of that. But there just came a point when it felt like the Lord was just asking us to kind of open up our hearts to maybe something different. I really didn't want to at first. I felt like I was really clinging to what I knew. But really kind of felt the tug of the Lord to say, Holly, just, you know, open up your heart to the possibility of something different. And so I really feel like it was truly only, it was only him that could do that, because in my own self, with my own personality and wanting that stability, I probably wouldn't have been able to do that.
It's really true. And I think the interesting thing about living by faith is you don't get to live by faith in the past. You have to live by faith in the present. And I think for me, especially, you know, Holly referenced the hard season at New Life 2006 and 2007. I had subconsciously sort of thought, hey, we've made it through. We walked through a trial. We showed great faith and faithfulness. And now we get to kind of put our roots down. And there are times when putting your roots down is the faithful decision. There are other times that actually being willing to follow Jesus in an unexpected turn is the faith-filled decision. And so, you know, both of us can look back, your move from Iowa to Colorado and then now to California, and me from Malaysia to America. I think there was a sense in which, for me, probably, that I had made kind of this unofficial inner vow that, Lord, I'm not going to do to my children what I experienced as a child, which wasn't bad. I didn't have bad, you know, but it was difficult, right? Moving to America at 10 years old, and then moving back to Malaysia at 13, and then moving back to America alone at 17 to go to college. Once we got married, it was like, okay, we're going to create stability. And Holly grew up in a farming community where generations had lived. So I was drawn to that stability, and we both were like, let's create that same thing. Mm-hmm. And again, sometimes faithfulness looks like roots. Sometimes faithfulness looks like putting the sails up in the boat and following the wind of the Spirit. We did take a long time. We took about a year. Actually, more than that, if you think about when the idea of Rock Harbor first was presented to us, March of 2021, to when we actually moved, August of September of 2022, more than a year of mulling it over, first being closed, then open, then being scared, then, you know, lots of wise counsel, lots of prayer, lots of visits, on and on. Yeah.
You guys have four children, and several of them are at that kind of critical age that you inferred, Glenn. You know, you had a daughter right on the bubble of college, right about your discernment time. Holly, what did you guys do to involve your kids and help them navigate this big, like they've only ever known the springs?
Right. Well, we had a sense just for our family that we really wanted to involve them in the process. We weren't giving them that decision-making power, but we really wanted them to pray with us. So actually in the early days, they kind of overheard us talking about this before we were going to bring them into the process. Yeah. But so they were kind of in on it pretty early. But we just wanted to pray together, ask them to pray individually for a sense from the Lord. And actually kind of surprising to us, one of our kids early on said, you know, I kind of sense like maybe this is what the Lord is saying we're supposed to do. Like, I know this is our like teenager who's going to be, who's in high school. And I was fairly surprised because we knew it would probably be a pretty hard move for her in high school. Yeah. But slowly, I think our kids really kind of on their own at different times had a sense that this is what the Lord had for us. And I know that's not always that way for each family. Yeah. We did have one of our kids that was definitely more resistant and did not want to leave, you know, our community and friends. And of course, we all felt that pull and that difficulty to not want to leave. But I'm grateful that, we kind of wanted to do it together and pray together and sense together what God had for us.
And even for that one who was resistant, we, on our final visit out here, the only visit that we made with all the kids, they all said green lights. Like, we kind of did a check-in every night of the visit. We're like, green, yellow, red, where are you at? You know, and by the last night, all of them were like, it's a green light. We're supposed to, it's going to be hard, but we're supposed to do this, you know?
Mm. Yeah. You know, Glenn, you are a public figure. A lot of people who know church leadership know you from your work, your music, and your writing and your preaching and leadership. But still, you come to a new church and you have to establish trust. To me, it reminds me of Jerry Seinfeld, of all things. He talks about, he says, it doesn't matter how famous you get as a stand-up comedian, that fame only buys you the first 3 minutes on the stage, and then it's all up for grabs again. It's a fascinating idea that he has to earn trust every night. I think there's some parallels there. You've been there less than a year now. What do you and Holly intentionally do to cultivate a culture of trust and time so people can get to know you guys and you can get to know them? What are some things that you guys are doing there?
I mean, I think there's a few things that come to mind. One is we made a concerted effort to go slow. So no big changes, no big declarative statements. In fact, I think from September all the way till January, it was mostly a season of discerning. And I've started journaling this to try to recap the last 10 months, you know, and it was mostly a season of listening. So one of the things both of us did is I sat down with every single staff person, full-time or part-time, for about 90 minutes. And Holly did the same for all the female staff people and for some of the female spouses as well. And just to say, tell me your story. Tell me your passion. Tell me about how the Lord called you into ministry. Tell me your dreams for your own life and calling, how you make sense of your own calling, and where you see that aligning or not aligning with what you're currently doing at Rock Harbor. So it wasn't an evaluation of your role. It was truly an interest in who they are as people and how they came to sense their own calling. And I think what we wanted to communicate right away was that we care about you as a child of God. We care about you as a person that God has given gifts. And we believe the kingdom of God is spacious. Whether or not, however long your time on staff is at the church is irrelevant. You matter to God and you matter to his kingdom because of who you are. So slowing down to be able to take time to listen to those stories was an intentional step. I think along with that was just to be accessible. Mm-hmm. So you know, you could say, you know, speed. We slowed down speed. We took time to listen. But then even just being approachable and accessible, we would stand out in the lobby, still do. This is our habit. We don't hang out in green rooms, and different personalities are wired different way. But for both of us, we just stand out in the lobby, shaking hands, meeting people, trying to memorize names. We actually had, this was a brilliant move from Rock Harbor, is they had someone coordinate group dinners in different people's homes. And I thought that was really brilliant because instead of us being inundated with the one-offs, they actually had someone almost concierge this and say there were, I think there was four different group dinners. And so we would go to about one a month or so. And in that one dinner, we'd meet 12 people, for example. And it was a great time to spend 2-3 hours with a group of people. So lots of settings like that. Then come January, we started to create a regular small group. So we created a dinner group with our lead team once a month, and then a dinner group with some couples in the church twice a month. You know, so there's that accessibility, that relational stuff. And as I began to slowly push on, okay, here's where we're going to redesign things, I think what began to happen is as that relationship, the slowing down, the trust began to grow, they would invite me into co-dreaming and co-designing areas of the church. And Rock Harbor, like so many churches right now, are, you know, after the pandemic, it's almost like you're a church planter again, because you have ground zero in a lot of ways. And so I had all these ministry areas, you know, people leading ministry areas say to us and to me, like, hey, do you want to talk about this? And they were inviting me to put my imprint on it. But really, it felt collaborative by that point. It felt like we were co-dreaming, co-designing. And now I think I'm in phase 3 of this first year. Now I'm being a little bit more directive and declarative about certain decisions. And it's okay now. Like, they actually, now they're like, oh, thanks for that clarity. Wasn't quite what I was hoping for, but I appreciate knowing. But if I'd come in with declarative and directive style, it would not have worked. It would not have gone well.
Yeah. One of the things that I think every public pastor has to deal with. And by public, I don't mean that they're famous nationally. I just mean that they're on a stage opening a Bible for people on a regular basis. So one of the biggest challenges is criticism. I think ministry tends to attract more sensitive, nuanced people, which means that we are more easily affected by criticism. I know in my own ministry, I always believed I should have been able to get above it. And it was only in my last 5 years as a lead pastor, I gave myself permission to be hurt. Like, no, that hurts because it's hurtful. But I think one of the neglected areas of criticism is what I call secondhand criticism, which is how a spouse is impacted by it. Holly, you're a pastor, you're a leader, you have quite a ministry, but your husband in this case is the more public figure. What's it like when Glenn takes shots? And I'm not specifically talking Rock Harbor. He's just a public pastor and has been for a couple of decades. What's that like for you?
Yeah, that's a great question, Steve. It's very difficult. I think often, Glenn, he's great about coming home and really bringing me into those situations. And so we can kind of be in it together and communicate together about it. But I think it is hard for me. And I do tend to take some of that woundedness on, or maybe certain lines will stick with me. And then I can sometimes, you know, maybe in my mind sort of pinpoint a person as this or that, or this, you know, really kind of narrate their life around one scenario or situation, which is not fair, given that there's often a lot more, you know, a positive context that I have previously known, or maybe sometimes I do know them personally and have a different experience relationally with them. But I think it is often true that I think sometimes I might hang on to it a little bit longer, and Glenn, maybe especially if it's someone that he's seeing regularly, can have more opportunities to have a new narrative, but I might kind of hang on to that older narrative and sort of have a script over that person that's sometimes hard to regain a new script if I don't personally have that opportunity to have a new experience with them.
That's been my wife's challenge is like, we would say, she's like, look, you get to be in the ring. This is not a great metaphor, but you get the boxing gloves, but I still get kind of hit, but I don't get to be in there and have a direct, in the metaphor, a fight, but I don't get to have that direct. It's all indirect. I'm hearing it from you. And then early in our marriage, she's like, this is terrible. You'd never update me that things are fine now. I'm still carrying.
Yes.
But one of the other areas that Lisa struggled with is, of course, there are decisions that I would have to make as because of my role, and she disagreed with him, which she has every right to do.
But that never happens with us, Steve.
No, I'm sure. It's just a unique must be hard situation. For you in this Right. But then she has to stand in the lobby and hear people grumble on a side that she's on, right? Like she's quietly saying, oh man, me too. And yet we are very close. We love each other. We have each other's back. So she can't really say, oh yeah, Steve's crazy, you know. Holly, tell us a bit about that. We don't need specifics or dirt. Sure, just kind of like, what does that feel like?
Yeah, no, I can definitely relate to that.
Oh,
I
think, really?
Yeah. I mean, there's some times where I feel I'm tracking, and other times I will, you know, have a different perspective on a situation or what I might do. I think I definitely would approach it differently sometimes. That is, that's challenging. I'm with Lisa there. It's difficult to kind of hear maybe what other people think, and maybe sometimes it's hard for them to be sharing that with me, but yet I want to be a good listener and I want to be empathetic to how that might affect different people. But it kind of reminds me too of sometimes with parenting, you know, there are times where actually it's like, you know, Glenn and I are trying to be on the same page and we're trying to get to the same place, but sometimes we don't, and we have to figure out what direction we're going to go, and it's challenging.
Well, you do a really good job of, there's never a divided front to people. Like you, I think you've perfected the art of listening with empathy without adding your own, like, oh yeah, me too. You know,
You should be tried to marriage to this guy.
So that's good. And I think if I'm trying to identify just a general sort of, when does that occur? It's not that we have different values, but oftentimes it's different priorities of those values.
Yeah.
And I think that's what happens in any ministry and in any team, is you might say, oh, that is important to me, but we're not getting to that now. And for some people, it's a mismatch of timelines or a mismatch of priorities. And that makes it challenging.
Yeah, I think that's mostly what it's been maybe in the past year. Even with being in a new place, I might see something. There might be a few staff that we think, oh, this is what, you know, I feel like this is really important. I feel like God sees, you know, wants this for our church, sees this. And Glenn's like, well, maybe not yet. Or, okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, Glenn, you host this wonderful podcast, The Resilient Pastor. Boy, you've recently added two of my favorite pastors, Sharon Miller and Rich Velotis. Amazing. And the fact that we're kind of all friends and know each other is just a treat for me. I would love to just hear one thing from you and from you, Holly. What's one thing that both of you are really excited about when you think of the local church?
Wow. Just one, huh?
No.
Just one.
You know, I think when I think about the local church, I think of faithful Christians, faithful hidden saints. Just this morning, I was in a conversation with someone at the coffee shop, and they said, oh, yeah, did you know that, you know, we had the sponsorship thing going on, and 11 children lost their sponsors, and this one couple found out about it and said, quietly, shh, we're going to pick it up and carry it on. Mm-hmm. And they said, well, do you want to just do that temporarily? And they said, no, we're going to see it through all the way till these kids go to college. Nobody knows about that. There's no testimony video being made about that. Nobody's posting on Instagram about it. But it's that quiet, ordinary work of the saints. That the church, the local church, is full of people like that and stories like that that don't get any headlines or press, you know.
I think lately I've just had the opportunity to meet with people who are newer believers in our church, and that's been really exciting just to hear their stories and their journey of coming to faith. And, you know, maybe they'd heard about Jesus previously. I'm thinking of one particular person. But just that, just to be around someone with that fresh excitement for the Lord and what he's doing in their life. And I love being on the end of just trying to kind of help answer as much as I can theologically and help them, you know, kind of parse through things and just be there alongside to encourage them in their journey. And so it's just, yeah, it's really exciting to kind of be alongside in someone's journey as a new believer.
Mm-hmm.
Folks, as my regular listeners know, coming up in October 2nd through 4th, we are hosting the Unlocking Faith Conference. As Lisa and I have done this work, and as we've brought in some others, we just have pinpointed that many of us have beliefs that it turns out are more core than our most precious belief in Jesus. We didn't realize this. We don't say it with shame or condemnation, but the story we tell ourselves, the way we see ourselves, the way we need the world to be a certain way for us to be okay, these are all blocking our capacity to experience God's love and freedom and peace. So the Unlocking Faith Conference is uniquely designed to give you these keys to unlock the things that are blocking faith in your life so that the floodgates of God's love and peace can flood through your soul. If you believe in God's love but you struggle to experience it, or if you believe in God's peace or freedom but you don't feel it in your body, this conference is for you. We're flying in Dr. Chuck DeGroat to help us with this. We're also flying in Jill Phillips and Andy Gullihorn because music is such a huge part of God's beauty, and we want to have a beautiful experience at this conference. You can join us right here in Colorado. You can also live stream. You can watch on demand later. You can even open up your auditorium and host the conference yourself. October 2nd through 4th, capablelife.me is where you get information and tickets. Okay, Glenn and Holly, you guys have been very intentional for years about retreating as a couple for your own enjoyment, but also for planning of your own individual lives and your marriage. You're quite structured about it, and you recently released a book, Intentional Year, and it's designed to help us, particularly maybe those of us who hear about rule of life or structure or things, but we're just not sure where to start. And you've given us this amazing book that I think individuals and couples can really benefit from. And you invite us into five inventory habits: prayer, rest, renewal, relationships, or you call it circles of relationship, habits of work. Tell us about the heart behind Intentional Year.
Well, I think we probably 12 years ago or so, we had met with a couple couples who were kind of like mentors to us, and they started telling us that they would take some time away each year to just be together, to pray, to reflect on the year, and then think about the next upcoming year. And so we were inspired by them to do this. And so we started just when our kids were really young, and to go away for a couple nights, and just sort of started with a couple simple things of like praying about, you know, reflecting on the year in a really simple, basic way. And then as the years went on, we just sort of kind of started adding different things to it and playing around with some different exercises, prayers, discussions that we could have, things we could read. And kind of that's how the retreat sort of came about. And we had someone say to us, you guys should really, like, I want to know exactly what you do. You should write this down.
We kept talking about it. And people were like, well, how do you do this? And I think what we began to realize is sometimes spiritual practices feels overwhelming. It feels like this buffet. And you're like, everything looks good. Which one do I try? And how? So think of this book as we've curated a 5-course meal for you, you know, and we're guiding you through these steps. And I say 5-course meal. It's really like 3 sections to it. And the first part is reflection, which is really a 2-part kind of thing. So we use the prayer of examine, which is an old Ignatian prayer, but we help people apply it to a long season that's gone by. So either the whole previous year or maybe a 6-month chunk. We eventually, probably 5 or 6 years ago, began actually doing this retreat twice a year, once in like December or January, and then once in like July, August, because with kids and school, like everything changes around the school year. It's not just the calendar year, it's the school year. So that phase one is like, take, you know, reflect back and then listen. Part two of, or the, you know, A, B part of that first phase is then listen for a word for the season. Because we began to discover that it's not really about just busying your life. You need to do the right work for the right season. Holly's dad's a farmer, and you know, you've learned a lot, and I've learned a little bit over the last, you know, how many years of listening to him, that the good work done in the wrong season is bad work. You know, it's the wrong work. So that listening for the season is all part of that preparation. And then that middle bit, the 5 spheres that you mentioned, maybe you can talk about that, how we landed on those 5 kind of areas, you know, or well, just.
Yeah, as you said, Steve, it's kind of, you know, it's inspired from the rule of life. But we felt like we kind of wanted to have a rest category and also a renewal category, because there's some things that kind of overlap in those, but there's some things that might be more really restful and some things that we might need to do to recharge. And then I particularly really like to talk about the relationship category, because I think it's something that maybe in our minds, we do sort of separate, like, okay, these are people that I'm, you know, want to or need to spend more time with. Or we might kind of have these circles in our minds, but might not want to admit that, or might have a hard time figuring out how, you know, who to spend time with. And so I think just being honest about with the time that we've been given, that we can't spend time with everyone that we might want to. And so this section really is about prayerfully discerning, Lord, who do you have for me to spend time with in this season? And there might be, you know, those core people in your family that's always going to, you know, those people are always going to be kind of in that inner circle. But then I think some other, you know, depending on the season or for us moving, obviously that, you know, completely changed for us. There are some relationships that we're really going to give continued time to, and we have a lot of new relationships. So really being prayerful about, Lord, who are the people, you know, and that I'm working with that you called me to spend more time with, or maybe that's, could be email, it could be texting, could be FaceTime, or maybe it's face-to-face. But I think we've talked to people too. People often feel just very overwhelmed by that. Maybe they just become, they don't initiate at all because they're overwhelmed by the idea of not knowing what to do. And so I think, you know, just taking this time for us at least a couple times a year to discern, you know, what people you've called us to in this year and how often. And then we have conversations together to kind of make those decisions.
Yeah, I love the way you're talking about circles of relationship, because I know Felice and I both, we would both say that there are too many people we enjoy inside too many circles.
Yes.
That's kind of
yes.
the nature of being a pastor. Like if you yeah. if you're a pastor, you tend to enjoy people. And so therefore yeah. most people you meet you enjoy.
Yes.
And next thing we know, we're always feeling guilty. Like it's yeah. just that constant low level yeah. guilt. Oh, we should have these people yeah. over. We should spend uh-huh. more time.
Yeah.
But for you guys to take an inventory, I also love, I'm putting words in your mouth here, Holly, but it's almost like, okay, who are the life-giving people? Now, who are the people that the only reason I love them is Jesus said I have to love them. Like, it's a command. Like,
right.
So that's interesting. I think what would really help my listeners is I was listening to this answer. It would be really helpful to hear more from you guys on the difference between rest and renewal.
Mm. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Let me just make a quick comment on the circles of relationship, just yeah. for your listeners to imagine concentric circles where there's a smaller circle in the middle and then bigger circles. So that smaller circle is exactly what you described, Steve, where not only are they life-giving, but those are the relationships that are reciprocal and maybe even symmetrical. There's no power differential there. Yeah. So there's mutuality. And I just because so many of your listeners are leaders and pastors, Steve, tying into some of the resilient pastor work, if there's one thing pastors are lacking in relationships, they're really lacking relationships that are symmetrical, not asymmetrical. Yeah, where there's no power differential and where it is reciprocal. Yes, peers, to say it simply, where there's mutuality.
Yeah, so, someone has to write a book on friendship for leaders. That is a book that needs to be written.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I mean, we're feeling it in a new way, being in the lead pastor role, that it's very hard to get time and people that are in that space. And so, I mean, one example that I have a monthly Zoom group with three other pastors, and it's a peer level, and that is my lifeline. And we have a text thread that's constantly going. Mm-hmm. And I more than ever have needed that lifeline because, I just needed that. So intentionality there. Okay. Rest and renewal. Sorry. We think of rest as like that's the ways that you stop from work. So think of it as almost like the negative, like what am I not going to do? The negation of. So I'm not going to check email on this day, or these are my blackout hours. It could be things like, well, I'm going to leave my phone in the kitchen to charge overnight and use something else as an alarm clock. So rest are all the ways you create negative space in your life where what am I not going to do? What am I going to disengage from? Renewal is on the positive end. What do I do to actually recharge? You know, so, okay, I've stopped doing things that are draining the battery, but am I doing anything to actually reduce the battery, you know, recharge the battery? And I think it's important to think through that, and it's going to be different for different people. I had a spiritual director a few years ago point out to me, he's like, why don't you just sit down and play the piano anymore? You know, why don't you pick up your guitar anymore? Or out here in California, for Holly, it's like, if it's, you know, sunny, which is like often, except for recently, the last few months have not been, it's like, let's go for a walk. So we're always trying to go for a walk. Or I got a new bike recently. I'm like, I like bike rides. I want to ride my bike more, you know. And so it's a good rhythm of renewal when I know when we're going on walks or bike rides or reading or whatever that might be.
It's really wild, isn't it? Like what I love about Intentional Year is you really have given us a roadmap of structure, but it's not overwhelming. Sometimes these things can feel like, it's too much to do. I think the challenge is that we tend to want the perfect rule of life. And so we then adopt 10 of them.
That's right.
You know, like maybe Pete Scazzaro has a way of being and you guys have a way of being. And what we do is we say, well, let me get all of that right. But I love that you guys have given us a very holistic approach, but it's quite simple. Mm-hmm. I think many of us, I put myself in this category, if I don't structure my life, I tend to swing wildly from overworking to laziness.
Mm-hmm.
And then I say, well, rest and renewal is binging Ted Lasso on the couch rather than a more constrained. Well, I wonder if you guys would speak to that.
Yeah, I think
so. You could speak to someone binging TV. Were you going to?
No, I was going to say that I think some people might look at us or have asked us like, well, did you guys write this because this is just so easy for you and you just naturally have maybe your personality is wired more towards this. And I think Glenn's might be a little bit more, but I naturally am a little bit more of a flowy person and kind of want a lot of freedom and space to change things up. And so I think a lot of it, I've been drawn to it, not because it's so natural for me, but because I really need it.
Yeah.
And I really function so much better and feel like the Lord can use me so much more when I am more structured and ask him to help me put these things in place. And I think it's also not that, oh, we have this rule of life and we do it perfectly and I'm always consistent with all my rhythms. But I think because it's a rhythm rather than maybe a goal that I'm meeting for a certain season, it's a constant rhythm in my life that if I get off of that, I can get back on.
That's so good. I thought you were going to tell on me because I realized I'm a lot like you, Steve, where I'll push and push. I'll generate content or work or, you know, reply emails, whatever. And then I'll be like, I need to recharge and you know, watch Seinfeld reruns or whatever. And realizing that's not really rest. Because now I'm losing sleep. And it's not really renewal. It's a little bit. Laughter is good, all that. So forcing myself to think about the kind of person God is calling us to become in this season. We're very careful early in the book to say there's a difference between productivity and fruitfulness. Productivity is efficiency oriented. It's output oriented. This is not that. This is not a how to be super effective kind of book. Fruitfulness is about who you're becoming. Productivity is about what you're doing and accomplishing. Fruitfulness is about who you're becoming. And when you think about fruitfulness, there's certain things you can do. You can till the soil. You can prepare the ground. You can tend to the plant. But you can't force a bountiful harvest. You can't predict this is going to be and again, learning this from the farming, family background that Holly has, I think has been really helpful, especially to me, to say, okay, so if this is about who we're becoming, and we know life might blow you off course. There might be a year where there's a drought, quote unquote, and you don't get to your rhythms as much. It's okay. Mm-hmm. We live by the ocean now. We see sailboats out there all the time. Like, if you don't set a course, you'll never know if you're off course, you know? But if you set a course, the wind might change and you might be off by a few degrees. That's okay. You're still going to be in a general direction. You can recalibrate. So just the other day, we were saying, gosh, our morning time with God not happening, or really, we're really struggling to, you know, we're waking up too late. We're not really reading the Bible. And that's so perfectly human conversations to have. While saying, okay, what do we need to adjust to make it easier?
We're heading into summer, so things are changing. Mm-hmm. Our kids are out of school. So like now we're recalibrating. How are we going to reorient our rhythms?
Yeah. Or for me at work, I've realized, gosh, we are so easily tipping into 4 nights, 5 nights a week. It's not sustainable.
Yeah, Glenn, you sacrificed a lot of Nuggets games for the kingdom of God this season.
You know, man, you would text me. I'd be like, I got to go to this church thing. I got to go to this.
Yeah, I was very impressed. Yeah. Yeah. Okay. So you're leading us through a 3-step process in intentional year. I love that you start with reflection because I'm so quick to start with planning, but you really do put us in a way of reflecting. And then we take inventory and then we go to action. Let's say someone's listening and they're just feeling like, oh man, I'm back in the momentum of do. Mm-hmm. What's your first piece of advice for them?
I think there's a way to interrupt the cycle without going fully into the every, you know, all 3 steps of the intentional year. And so people will sometimes ask us, where do we start? You know, how do we possibly? Mm-hmm. And I'll say, if you could find 2 hours in your week, start with that first part of the reflection thing of using the prayer of examine to reflect back on the season you've just come out of. That is going to create a hunger, I think. And that's going to create a hunger to say, oof, I don't want to repeat that. Or I want to live more purposefully. And then find another hour block this time and listen to the Lord for the season ahead. You know, so someone might say, I can't do this retreat. We have young kids, or life is too crazy, or we don't have the budget. Okay. Do it on a series of Monday mornings. You take a few half-day Mondays and slowly work through it. And by the time you get to the inventory and action step, you can jump in on this because you often say this to people, like, pick 1 or 2 practices. Don't try to pick 1 for all 5 spheres or 2 things for all 5 spheres. Like, probably what you'll discover is in some of those spheres, it's way overblown. You're doing too many on the work rhythms, or it's too erratic on the relationships one. and not enough on the others. And so you're going to try to find some way to even that out. But there is a meta practice that actually speaks to all five areas, and that is Sabbath. Sabbath tells you when not to work. Sabbath tells you when to rest. A Sabbath creates a when you're going to do something renewing. A Sabbath tells you when you might hang out with true friends where there's mutuality. And Sabbath tells you when you're going to be able to pray. You know, so even if you, there's that, that's the hack into the action step is your, if your only action step is I'm going to find a way to build in Sabbath in my life this year, this fall, that's a hack that actually speaks to all five areas.
I had an Old Testament professor tell us in seminary that Sabbath was not about rest. It was fundamentally about control first, that humans think we have to be in control and therefore Sabbath is a trust, which so then opens the heart up to rest. I've never forgotten that. That was profound for me, especially as a new Old Testament professor. He had his doctorate in Syriac or one of those weird dead languages, you know, he's that kind of guy. But he opened Winnie the Pooh for us and he integrated Winnie the Pooh and Genesis 1 and Sabbath and we're all weeping, you know, and he's a very academic guy. He's just very businesslike. And we're like, oh, having
amazing.
A moment.
Wow.
Yeah. Holly, tell us about the journal that you guys are releasing. This episode's coming out late June and just a couple of weeks before you release this new journal.
Yeah. Yeah, we're really excited about this. It basically, so throughout the Intentional Year book, there is reflection questions, but there isn't space in the book to really write about that. So basically what the journal is it's all the questions from the book kind of put into the journal, and there's spaces to reflect and answer on all of those things. You wouldn't have to transfer things or create your own journal, but it's all laid out for you. And with plenty of space to reflect and write about those things. And so, yeah, we're really excited for this companion journal to come out.
And I give you some example of this, you know, like in the section about reflecting on the past, you know, there's a question in here, where did you experience sorrow and grief in the last 6 months, say, or, you know, and then there's a whole page where you can write that down. And the next page is, where or how did you give and receive love? So these prompts are there. There's a few more things than, I mean, some of the questions, I think a lot of the questions are in the book. I think there are some new questions in here as well that with space. But just to guide you through it, it's designed to go with the book where the book gives a lot more of the why. And then the journal kind of helps just lead you through it.
Where can they pick up that journal?
Wherever books are sold, your favorite local bookstore, or of course that one online that everyone goes to.
The between 2-day and 3-hour shipping nowadays.
Yeah, I know.
I know, crazy. Well, listen, you guys have been great sports, but of course that's because you've not yet endured the gauntlet of anxiety questions.
Yes.
And I think we're just going to do two today. I think we'll just keep it real simple and I'll ask you both to answer both if you don't mind. Of course, this is optional. You can opt out. But, you know, one of the themes we are exploring is this gap between what we believe and what we encounter. I think it's profound. I just think about, okay, we believe that in God's love, God's presence. We believe that God offers us peace and freedom and love. But for some of us, these can feel elusive. So to begin with, is there a belief that one of you holds that you struggle to encounter in your life? For me, it's God's love. I have to intentionally work and posture myself to viscerally encounter the specific love of God for me because my default belief is that God just loves me generically. That would be an example. What would come to mind for you guys?
I think it's that it's okay to fail, or to put it another way, that really you can't fail. You, that could sound like you're not allowed to. I think there's a freedom. I believe that there's a freedom that says you can't fail. There's no such thing as failing. You know, you can't lose. But actually what I live like is more like, you better not fail, you know?
Okay. Thank you.
Wow, this is hard. I don't know if this is exactly answering your question, Steve, but this is what comes to mind. I think in my mind, I think I should experience the Lord maybe in a particular way in different environments. And maybe I've been in spaces where it's like, if you're not, then, or maybe if it doesn't feel like you want to present in a certain way or express that in a certain way, then that reflects on your relationship with the Lord. And so that's just been a struggle for me to feel like that my relationship with the Lord isn't reflected on just how I'm presenting or how I express that. But really being convicted that it's really internal and that no one can really judge that.
Yeah, so good. And then the last question, Glenn, I know you've endured it before. I think it just fits so nicely into Intentional Year. When lately have you guys felt most fully and completely loved? And, you know, I just want to state, we've got a husband and wife on the podcast here, and there's no pressure and no meaning made if you're not immediately answering with each other in mind.
I think just spending quality time with Glenn is one of my favorite things. And so I think pretty much every week on a Friday morning is our time to do that. And so I think when we can just sit with each other and Glenn is really listening and just, we don't have other distractions. I feel just his presence with me, I feel really loved. Mm.
Yeah, I agree with that. And I mean, I know there's no pressure to say each other, but truly, I mean, that is the greatest way. Recently I was just kind of unloading to Holly about all this content I've got to prepare for a couple things coming up. And I was like, I don't know which talk to do or what, you know, and she just rattled off a couple things that I was like, oh, yeah, you know me, like you've been paying attention to my life's work, like these core messages that I forgot that you were like, those are your core. That's what you should talk about. So I felt very loved in that moment. Like, oh, we're, you know, you actually
I'm listening to you.
yes.
Folks, my guests are Holly and Glenn Packiam. Glenn has been a friend of the show on the episode a number of times. Lisa and I have had just the great pleasure of spending time with Glenn and Holly. Mm-hmm. Obviously, they are local church pastors at Rock Harbor, but they both have a public ministry that we all get to benefit from. If you've not listened to Glenn's podcast, The Resilient Pastor, it's phenomenal. It's fantastic because it helps pastors feel human-sized. Holly is doing some remarkable work integrating psychology and theology with her degree in counseling. And just the way they integrate their life together. In many ways, with all of the books that Glenn has written, Intentional Year really is a beautiful insight into how Glenn and Holly work together. Yeah. And obviously with the journal coming out here soon, I just highly commend it. Glenn and Holly, thank you so much for joining me on the show.
Thanks for having us, Steve.
Thank you, Steve. Always a pleasure.
For more resources, visit stevecusswords.com or missioalliance.org.